Hello, this is Jason Fudge, and I want to welcome everybody to this mini episode of From the Vault. On this bonus minisode, I bring our listeners back to last year when Daisy Chains and I discussed the Eric Franks case on an episode of True Cold Case Files. This minisode will be serving as a supplement to that episode, which will follow up on the shocking new details that have emerged in his case over the last couple of weeks. All of this and more on this bonus episode of From the Vault. Hello, everybody. This is Jason Futch, and thank you for joining me on this mini episode of From the Vault. I am alone in the studio. Nick is currently working on our next episode of From the Vault, so he was unable to attend this recording session. But it's okay because he was not with us when we discussed the Eric Franks case. At that point in time, we had just started our program, and my co-host was, well, none other than Daisy Chains. You all remember her, right? Well, that's good, because this is going to be a very important discussion, although it's really more or less an update. And I did ask that Daisy Chains join me on this episode of From the Vault. However, other obligations have forced her away from doing any kind of podcasting at the moment. So definitely keep her in mind at this time because she's going through a few things. So there's that. But nonetheless, I do want to go ahead and talk about the Eric Franks case because this is a very, very important case that I think the rest of the world should follow. And I know that there are people from around the country who have followed intensely on Eric's case. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and get straight to the point. But before I do that, I do want to remind everybody that today's episode is sponsored by Anchor FM and also by CrimeWatchers.net. If you have not had a chance to open up an account with Crime Watchers and join in on the conversation on cases that we have discussed on this show, go ahead and do it now at crimewatchers.net. With that being said, I want to go ahead and recap everybody on Eric's case, especially for those of you who are just joining me on this mini episode and don't know who Eric Franks is. Well, I'll tell you who he is. Eric was last seen at the Miller's Motel in Bridgeport Township near Saginaw, Michigan in October of 2011. He was in Michigan to be closer to his daughter after his ex-girlfriend, Kendra Firmingham, revealed that he was her daughter's father. Now, from that point on, when he came up to Bridgeport, he secured that motel room and he sought work. And he had work in a couple of odd jobs. But here's the deal. He had this idea that he could get Kendra back with him. That way, he, Kendra, and their daughter could have a happy home. However, the relationship was less than happy in real life. And it got to a point where apparently John Carnes, Kendra's husband, got pretty jealous and it got intense. Now, there were rumors and innuendos stating that John and Kendra had an arrangement in their marriage. But that's something I don't want to delve on. If you can go back to our episode on the Eric Franks case, go ahead and listen in. I discussed that entirely. Me and Daisy discussed that for an entire 2 hours. You can find the episode on YouTube. But nonetheless, there are two different stories that exist regarding Eric's disappearance. One came from Kendra, who said that Eric had packed his car up and drove to California for work prospects. She said the last time she saw Eric physically was he packed his stuff up, closed his door, and went on down the Dixie Highway. Then here's this. The second story is that the motel clerk that worked the day Eric checked out, and I put that in quotes, checked out, he saw Kendra packing Eric's belongings up in Eric's car and had driven the car out of the parking lot. He also recalled an incident where Eric and Kendra's husband, John, had a standoff in the parking lot where John threatened physical violence toward Eric, threatening that he was going to kill Eric. The motel manager witnessed this whole situation. And I'll even go back to my last statement discussing how Kendra saw Eric packing up his stuff and leaving the hotel. There was no evidence whatsoever that he had intentions to go to California for any kind of work whatsoever. There had been some side discussions in the past where Eric was talking about going to Texas for work, but that never panned out. So anyways, I do want to chat about an interesting revelation that was made in the episode where I interviewed Eric's mother, Joanne Franks. Now, this revelation that was made was that when the Michigan State Police did a luminol test inside Eric's room, they had found evidence of blood splatter on the walls. Now, I'm going to go back to that episode of In Depth from November of 2019 when I spoke with Joanne Franks. Go ahead and take a listen to this clip where her and I discuss the evidence found in Eric's room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another thing I would mention too, I was shown pictures of what police believed was Eric's blood splattered on the motel room wall. And it was running down the wall. I can't get the picture out of my head, and you're the first one I've actually shared that with other than my family and friends.
Really?
But my sister Faye and I went to Missing in Michigan, which I try to go about every year. I haven't missed but maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
And, they show pictures of the missing, and we get to light candles, and it's like sort of like a memorial.
Sure.
And we get, the police are there, and we can talk and everything. And but that the picture is in my head, and I want to know why there's no forensics been done on that.
So was that based on a luminol test?
I was given, I guess they used luminol to highlight it.
Mm-hmm.
It was on the wall about head level. It was on the baseboard. And I asked the specific question, do you believe that's Eric's blood? And I was told yes.
Wow.
Well, back when Eric first disappeared, I was told that police went into his motel room and saw nothing unusual or whatever.
Sure.
Well, this blood, what they believe is blood stains, I was told somebody took bleach and tried to get it off.
Yep.
And then they covered it over with a light pink paint.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who paints the motel room in the first place? That's kind of strange.
Right.
And then I'm not saying the police need to find this out. I'm not saying this is what happened, but it took 2 days for Kendra to clean out Eric's room. What was she doing in 2 days? But if that was there in the beginning, surely somebody would have noticed it. Although, as you said, the luminol highlighted it, maybe it wasn't checked close enough in the beginning.
And there was no records of the hotel owner doing any kind of maintenance work in that room, no painting jobs or anything?
Well, they asked him about it, and he said, and he's always told the same story about, Kendra's story was a falsehood. I've talked to him, please talk to him, media talk to him. He always sticks to the same story. But on that on the wall, I was told that he said there was someone checked into that room after Eric was gone, and that they kept seeing spots on the wall that bothered them.
Oh.
So they took bleach and tried to get it off. Well, if that room wasn't checked in the beginning, right after Eric, in those months after he disappeared, then maybe it was there all along. But they still could do forensics. They still could. That needs to be done, and I'm frustrated.
Now,
shocking, isn't it? I mean, the Michigan State Police found basically blood splatter on the wall, but unfortunately, it was not enough to charge Kendra or John with murder. With that being said, The car was never found. The car that apparently Kendra saw Eric leave in, which was this 2001 Chevy Malibu, she saw him drive off in it. But I'm going to tell you something, guys. The car was never found. I mean, there was talk amongst detectives. There was talks amongst the family that probably what happened was Kendra murdered her ex-boyfriend, dumped his body somewhere, and then took the car to some salvage yards for it to be taken apart and destroyed. Well, the car was never found until just a couple of weeks ago. The car was pinged in a Carfax search by Miranda Boffman, a Sacramento State University criminal justice student. She had punched in the car's license plate number 2 years prior. When it pinged, there was an update that noted the car had an oil change in Clare, Michigan recently. Now, I'm going to tell you guys how Miranda was able to do this. Miranda works at a car dealership in California. And she was also one of the many that were interested in Eric's case. So she decided to go forward and try to help this family as much as she could. And with that, when she punched in that Carfax report only one time, it essentially lodged that report indefinitely. So she was able to track this car for a long time. And there were no updates from that time period until just a couple of weeks ago when that car was pinged for an oil change. Her tip was submitted to Joanne Franks. And then she forwarded the information to her son-in-law, Chad Boss, who was vacationing on Mackinac Island at the time. And then he drove to where the car was located in Clare, and he got to see it. And then the car was reported to the Michigan State Police, and they took possession of the vehicle. Boss had also noted he saw stains in the car that he believed may have been blood. And in fact, the guy who had purchased the vehicle had told Boss that he usually did get cars that had some kind of biohazard in it. That way he could clean them up and then resell them or give them to people who needed vehicles. And he recalled that when he got the car, he remembered the smell and it smelled like blood. And then on top of that, he did remember seeing stains that closely resembled blood. With that, I'm going to tell you guys where this car was after all of this time, after all of this time that the car had been gone. The car had been parked inside the garage of local Saginaw resident Gerald Rutledge, a retired GM employee who was incapacitated and needed round-the-clock care. He passed away in April of 2020, in which the local Guardian program took possession of his belongings. It was also revealed that he was a millionaire who donated his wealth to local programs that included the police department and the fire department. With that, cadaver dogs were recently at that property seeking any evidence that Eric may have been concealed there. And I'm going to tell you why that car was there and why police think Eric might be concealed at this house or somewhere on the property. Kendra was his caretaker. Now, this is strong evidence right there that Kendra Firmingham was a suspect in this case and that there needs to be an arrest made right now. But here's the problem. Kendra Firmingham died in 2016 after suffering from cancer. Her daughter, Eric's daughter, was also suffering from the same cancer, and they were battling this cancer together. The daughter survived, but Kendra didn't. And for some time, there was speculation that Kendra may have been faking her death. Even her own family members doubted that she was dead. But then there was confirmation that she was dead based on obituaries and a death certificate that somehow was released to the public after so long. And they can't arrest her for murder now. However, this case now, in my opinion, would fall under a corpus delicti situation. And I had an interesting discussion with another podcaster about corpus delicti. And she told me that it would be very difficult to try someone on a no-body case. Because of the evidence, it would be really hard to try to pinpoint anything on anybody unless it was firm, absolute evidence that this could be proven. In this situation, I think there is solid evidence that Eric was murdered either in his car or somewhere else, and the car was used to transport his body somewhere, and the person who did it was either Kendra, her husband John, or it could have been somebody they were acquainted with. And it was also highly speculated that Kendra was also dating someone prior to John that went missing as well. I don't know this man's identity because there's no information on this guy, but apparently she was tied to this guy and he's missing as well. But the fact remains that whatever Michigan State Police finds in this vehicle, if they find blood, I can tell you guys honestly, oh, Kendra freaking did it. She did it. But right now, there's really no proof. I mean, all they need to do now is just find the blood in the car. If they can find blood in this car, it links back to Kendra and her husband because the car was found at a place where she was involved, the home of somebody she was taking care of. With that being said, I have nothing further to report right now, but I wanted to make sure that our listeners were able to get a solid update on this case because I know you guys have been anxious about what's been going on. I reached out to Joanne Franks recently, and she's declined to do a follow-up interview at this time because of the current situation. And she has been told that they cannot release any other bits of information because of this ongoing investigation. But when she does conjure up her thoughts and she can get it together, which I'm not rushing her, she needs to take all the time she can get because this is a lot to bear down on. But whenever she's ready, I'm here. And there's going to be a whole lot more to this case. I can guarantee you that. There's going to be a lot more to cover when this case breaks open because I think, honestly, really soon, Eric is going to be found. And when he's found, there will be a guilty party involved. We already know who that guilty party is. But this time, there's going to be arrests. No doubting that. There will be an arrest, no matter what. Doesn't matter that Kendra's dead. Her ex-husband, John, well, guess what? He probably was involved somehow, especially since there was a witness at the Miller's Motel who saw John threaten to kill Eric. So let's see what happens. And we are going to be focusing on new developments as they come. So we will provide, hopefully, an epilogue or update pretty soon should there be more news. So with that being said, please continue to keep the Franks family in your thoughts. And also feel free to revisit my interview with Joanne Franks. It is still available on the podcasting apps where you listen to us. However, you can find the entire episode that I did with Daisy on YouTube and Apple Podcast. So go ahead and check those out if you haven't done so already, and we'll keep you updated when we can. But if you have any information on Eric's case, please contact the Michigan State Police at 989-495-5555. Once again, that phone number is 989-495-5555. And as with any tip line, you can remain anonymous. With that being said, thank you so much for joining me on this mini episode of From the Vault. I'm Jason Futch, and I will see you on the next episode of From the Vault. Thank you.